Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Time check in our studios is 5 minutes past eight. Elsewhere in Accra, it's 7:05. A very good morning to you all and welcome to DW's Africa Link program with me, Isaac Mugabe, your host in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, South Africa's Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan presents the country's budget and with confidence lays out strategies to pull South Africa out of the economic plunge that it has taken.
We cannot borrow beyond our ability to repay. Until we can ignite growth and generate more revenue, we have to be tough on ourselves.
Kenya's Chief Justice, Willy Mutunga, decries the high level of corruption in the country's judiciary.
It causes me a lot of pain that an election involving judges and magistrates will be corrupt. Can you imagine a judge bribing another judge so that they can vote for them?
These stories and much more, plus our ongoing series of Crime Fighters, a learning by ear production, in the next 25 minutes. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We begin in South Africa, where the hiking of taxes and a cut down on wasteful government expenditure were the main highlights of the crisis budget presented on Wednesday by Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan. Gordhan reassured South Africans that the country would overcome its current economic challenges. Africa's most developed economy is struggling with shrinking growth, unemployment running at 25%, and widespread poverty. Despite all these challenges, the finance minister announced greater cooperation with the private sector in an effort to boost growth. From Johannesburg, Tuzo Kumalo reports.
Minister Gordhan did not disappoint those who had warned him to either perform or throw the country into a junk status downgrade. He assured investors that South Africa had the policies and the plan in place to overcome rising unemployment, weakening rand, and the slow economic growth.
We can become committed and be resourceful in tackling the challenges that we have ahead of us and seizing the opportunities and learning how to turn adversity into opportunity.
Gordhan announced a string of cost-cutting measures to reduce budget deficit. Government expenditure will be cut by $1.5 billion over the next 3 years. Tax increases will amount to nearly $2 billion by 2019, with the rich paying more. Travel costs and spending on official vehicles will be strictly controlled.
In simple terms, we cannot spend money we do not have. We cannot borrow beyond our ability to repay. Until we can ignite growth and generate more revenue, we have to be tough on ourselves.
The budget, however, managed to prioritize social services with over $55 billion put aside for improving public transport, energy, housing, health and water infrastructure. Education was also given a fair share following fees must fall protests in universities. Economic Freedom Fighters Party leader Julius Malema applauded the minister for targeting ending illicit financial flows and wasteful expenditure by government departments.
We think that the minister tried his level best. We'll engage further with the budget when it comes to its debate.
And young South African entrepreneur Lisbon Mbego also applauded the government for putting aside millions of dollars for the development and support of small businesses.
At least he touched on those particular things that affect us as small businesses, but we are saying let there be more implementation, let there be more support to young entrepreneurs and young businesses in the township and those people that are trying to build something for the country.
But Democratic Alliance Party's Shadow Minister of Finance, David Mainler, was not impressed.
We think, for example, that the minister should have looked at President Jacob Zuma's bloated cabinet, where we could have cut down the number of ministries to about 15 ministries, saving 4.7 billion rand a year.
However, the ruling African National Congress Secretary General Kwete Mantashe called it a people's budget.
Quite comfortable with the allocation of resources to education. That is advancing people's power. And the question of comprehensive social security and the role that will play by the state-owned companies, that is actually addressing the issues that affect us.
Experts say if the minister translates each of his words to action, the country could have a good story to tell at the end.
Tuzo Kumalo in Johannesburg to find out how the government will be able to deal with the current economic situation in South Africa. My colleague Jen Ayeko spoke to Daniel Silke, an independent political analyst based in Cape Town.
The government has to balance, obviously, spending cutbacks with trying to maintain its social spending in advance of local government elections. It has to find additional revenue from a middle class that's already squeezed in terms of relatively high income tax rates.
The International Monetary Fund and the World Bank predict that South Africa's growth this year will slide to less than 1%. Now, how big a blow is this on President Jacob Zuma and perhaps the ruling ANC?
Well, clearly the country needs to grow at substantially more than 1%. And we in this country have a blueprint document, the National Development Plan, that calls for growth in South Africa to be closer to 5%. So we are well below what should be a growth rate to sustain and to grow our economy. This low growth, of course, has a knock-on effect across the board. It reduces consumer confidence. It just does not enable us to make any cracks on our unemployment situation, with unemployment running at least anywhere between 25 and 35% here in South Africa. But of course, the big concern for this country is how the outside world views us and how the rating agencies, Standard & Poor's and Moody's, how do they view us? And what are the dangers of them downgrading our ratings to potentially junk bond status?
You just said how the rest of the world views South Africa. I would then be interested in knowing, is the performance of the South African economy kind of scaring away investors?
Well, I think there's not enough positive policy initiatives coming out of government to encourage investment. The South African government have concentrated on a large degree of state intervention in the economy. And unfortunately, many of these big state-owned enterprises have performed very poorly. And government has been very reluctant to consider privatizing any aspects or elements of these state-owned entities. Private sector involvement is critical in these state-owned enterprises. Would have been a positive sign to foreign investors that some policy changes can be made here.
Only recently, President Zuma promised to cut on government expenditure and also hike tax. Will this save the economy from being downgraded to junk status?
Government has been at pains in the last few weeks to indicate how they will cut costs. So at least on that, we have a commitment from government that business will be different in the future. But there's still tremendous wastage in the system. And again, the role of the state has not encouraged effective management of finances in these state-owned enterprises.
Daniel Silke, an independent analyst, speaking to Africa Link's Jen Ayeko.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Kenya's Chief Justice Willy Mutunga has spoken out on the rising level of corruption within the judiciary. This comes at a time when one of the Supreme Court judges, Philip Tunoi, is under investigation for allegedly receiving a $2 million bribe to influence an election petition arising from results in the 2013 Nairobi governorship election. But as James Chimanyula reports, the judge in question has since denied ever receiving a bribe to influence the governorship election.
Kenya's Chief Judge Willy Mutunga has revealed that the recent election of a representative of judges and magistrates to the country's Judicial Service Commission was riddled with bribery.
It causes me a lot of pain that an election involving judges and magistrates will be corrupt. Can you imagine a judge bribing another judge so that they can vote for them?
The judges and the magistrates had voted to elect their representative to the Judicial Service Commission, whose duties include recommending individuals to the president for appointment as judges, advising the government on improving the efficiency of the administration of justice, and appointing and receiving complaints against judicial officers. Chief Judge Willy Mutunga's revelation on bribery involving judges and magistrates comes at a time when the presidency has suspended a judge of the country's Supreme Court, Philip Tunoi, pending a probe by a 7-member special tribunal on allegations that he received a $2 million bribe. Judge Tunoi has vehemently denied that he was bribed by current Nairobi County Governor Evans Kidero to influence the outcome of a petition by a member of parliament challenging Kidero's election to his post in 2013.
I've never met Kidero physically. I've not even greeted his hand. I'm sure he must have seen me in court or anywhere, but I've never been close to him. I've never spoken to him.
As Kenyans eagerly wait for the special tribunal to probe Judge Tunoi, the third most powerful man in the country and the leader of the majority in parliament, Aden Duale, has found harsh words to describe the Kenyan judiciary.
The judiciary is called the temple of justice. You have turned the temple of justice to the temple of corruption.
Kioko Munguti, one of Kenya's independent experts on legal issues, gauged the gravity of the bribery allegations on the country's judiciary.
This will definitely dent the image of the judiciary because Justice Tunoi is one of the senior most judges having practiced in the judiciary for over 30 years and given his experience in law and being a judge of the highest court, the Supreme Court. It means the entire bench has been indented.
That report was compiled by James Shimanyula in Nairobi. Now to the Democratic Republic of Congo, where activists against President Joseph Kabila's bid for a third term have become targets of security agents and personnel. Rights groups say some of the activists have been detained in the past weeks, while others have been threatened because of their work. From Kinshasa, Patrice Chitera has been finding out what it means to be an activist in the DRC.
Jonas Chombela is in his office giving instructions to a cleaner on how to repair a generator. Chombela is the chairman of a non-governmental organization called Nouvelle Société Civile Congolaise. Now his group joined a movement known in French as Front Citoyen or Citizens Front. Front Citoyen was created recently to block an attempt by President Joseph Kabila to extend his stay in power after his current term ends by the end of this year. Since joining the group, Chombela has had to take extra security precautions. Two of his colleagues have received death threats by people he suspects to be from the intelligence service. Chombela tells how he's trying to cope with the threats.
I'm no longer free to live my life as in the past. I can no longer hang out in bars or public spaces. I'm reduced to going to work. I can no longer relax and go anywhere I want. Every time I move across the city, I have to inform a group of close friends who must be aware of where I am, with whom, and what I'm doing.
In a monthly report on human rights, the UN said that more than 400 cases of rights violations have been documented across the country since January. 52 people have been arrested in that period alone. Increased persecution and the limitation of political space are linked to the debate about the attempt by President Joseph Kabila to run for a third term despite a ban by the Constitution. Jose Maria Aznar, who is head of UN's Human Rights Department in the DR Congo, presented the report.
We've documented 50 cases of detention related to pro-democracy activism. This is a sharp rise compared to last month. It's also an increase over the figure recorded in January of last year, when there were protests across the country.
The organization Human Rights Watch recently reported the arbitrary arrest of 8 young activists.
Patrice Chitera with that report. It's now time to sit back, relax, and have another chance to listen to this week's segment of Crime Fighters, a Learning by Ear production.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Greetings and a very warm welcome to a brand new radio drama. Get ready for Crime Fighters, Land of Chongwe, written by Crispin Mwakidiwu. Our story takes place in Africa and it begins on a beautiful flower plantation in Chongwe. The flower farm is owned by Roses International, a foreign multi-billion dollar flower company. With the demand for flowers rising all over the world, Roses International leases a huge chunk of fertile land in Chongwe, where it now grows roses for export. The government forced the people who live there to make way for economic activity, which it said would benefit the community. Led by their revered chief known as Awombo, the residents of Chongwe have become squatters in their own country. And now, the chief has been missing for over a week. The first episode is called The Missing Chief. Let's join Zimari and Pambo, two workers at the flower farm, as they get ready to start work.
Okay, everyone. Remember, each of you has to harvest 10 kilos of flowers this shift. Anything less than that, and we'll deduct the difference from your wages and hire someone else who can meet our expectations. Is that clear? Okay, let's go.
Oh, Bambo, how I hate this supervisor.
Shh, Zumari, watch your mouth. You know we need this job. Come on, let's go. They told us to start picking roses at the far end of the farm. It's a long way off. And you have the supervisor. Not less than
10 kilos of roses.
Yes, I had her. Let's go.
So, Pambo, how are your two children? Are they still fighting over every last piece of bread?
Oh, shut up, Zumari. At least my kids fight over the last piece of bread. My neighbor's children. They fight over who gets to use the bathroom first.
Well, I can't blame them. Ever since we were kicked off the land we now have to work on, there just hasn't been enough space for all of us.
Yes, the lack of toilets is the worst. Living in makeshift houses is not what the government promised us when they gave our land to the flower company. Well, at least we can earn money to feed our families.
But Pambo, I am sick of this life. We had our own farms right here on this land. We were self-sufficient. We didn't need to work for anyone else in order to survive. Certainly not for foreigners. Look at us now. They treat us like slaves.
Zumari, whatever it is you had for breakfast, don't ever eat it again.
Wake up, Pambo. Can't you see for yourself what's happening? Where's our chief? No one's heard anything from him for over a week. Why?
I have no idea. Maybe Chief Awombo decided to visit the sacred shrines in Chongwe Mountains. He's probably gone there to seek guidance from the spirits of his forefathers.
Oh, come on. It's those thugs we are working for. They've abducted him because he's always speaking out against the takeover of our land by Roses International.
Hey, Zumari, are you going crazy? I'm really not keen on working with people who have a screw loose.
Call me crazy or whatever you like. But mark my words. Something's cooking. And very soon, I'll be proved right.
Ah, Zumari, that's all just speculation. Our employers, Roses International, promised to fully cooperate in the search for Chief Awombo.
Ah, that's all just to fool people like you. Even the reward of 500,000 that the government's offering to anyone who finds the chief is just a lie. I may be a flower picker, but I am nobody's fool.
Okay, nobody's fool. Let's get to work.
Count the flowers, count the flowers, count the rainbows, flowers, count the flowers.
Shut up, Bumble. Shut up.
Nothing like a cup of coffee to start the day, right, cousin?
Zamba, you need to get your act together and find this Chief Awombo. As head of the National Intelligence Service, this is your top priority. The president wants the mystery of Awombo's disappearance solved, and she wants it solved now.
Kuzacha, when did you start taking orders from a woman seriously? Let her talk. That's what politicians do.
Will you stop talking like that about our boss? She appointed me Interior Minister, remember? President Imani is the head of state, and she deserves some respect. Besides, someone might hear us.
You're so funny. Kuzacha, I'm the head of this country's secret service. I can find out which side of the bed President Imani sleeps on and with whom if I want to. So relax. My boys are out searching for the lost sheep. The missing chief.
You've been telling me that for over a week now. I'm responsible for the internal security of this country. And I need something concrete, Zamba. President Imani has called a cabinet meeting for tomorrow. What am I going to tell her about the missing chief? You know how revered he is, not just in Chongwe, but throughout the country. We need to find him as soon as possible.
Then increase the reward money for whoever finds him. That might motivate people. Who knows? The old man might even come out of his hiding place and claim the reward for himself.
Stop being sarcastic and show some respect. Okay, we'll raise the reward to 1 million. I'll order my secretary to announce it on all local media. But I hope this gets us somewhere, Zamba. I don't want to lose any more sleep over this.
Look, just tell Madame le Président that we are following some leads and hope to solve the case as quickly as possible. I mean, it's not as if we are looking for someone who can run, is it?
That wasn't funny, Zamba. This generation has absolutely no manners. Okay. Another question. Do you think the chief is still alive?
Huh? What kind of question is that? Of course he's alive.
That's good. Because you know Chief Owombo is seen as a hero for standing up to the colonialists. He was a key figure in the fight for independence. So if anything happens to him, you can be sure it won't go down well with his people in Chongwe.
Stop worrying, Kuzacha. You're giving yourself grey hairs. We'll find this so-called independence hero.
Oh, phew. I needed a break. So what did you pack for lunch, Zomari?
The usual. Cassava and black tea. What did you bring?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
Let me look in my bag.
Empty cups? You brought empty cups?
And an empty stomach too. Would you mind sharing your cassava, Zomari?
I'm speechless.
Good. That's good table manners. No talking while you eat.
Table manners? I don't see any table here. All I see are roses all around. A blue sky with the hot sun beating down and this river flowing. Oh, Pambo! Pambo!
What? What is it, Zomari?
Look! Over there! In the river, floating down towards us.
Oh my goodness! That looks like
a human being.
Hey, quick! We have to do something. He's drowning.
But how? What if... Maybe we'd better just call for help, Pambo.
There's no time for that. Come on, quick! He's floating right past us. We just need to stretch a bit and you can pull him out of the water. Come on. Okay, stay near the bank and hold my left hand. I'll reach out and grab him with my right and pull him out of the water. All right? That's it. Almost there. One, two, and now.
Is he still alive? He doesn't seem to be breathing. What are you doing, Pambo? No, please don't turn him over.
Chief Owombo?
Pambo and Zomari are left standing by the riverside, staring dumbfounded at the body of their beloved Chief Owombo. Is he still alive? What will they do next? Find out the answers to these questions in the next episode of Land of Chongwe. As always, you can listen to this episode again by visiting our webpage dw.com/crimefighters. And please let us know on our Facebook page what you think of this series. Until next time, stay safe.
And now a reminder of the stories that we've covered for you. South Africa's finance minister has reassured this country of a bright future despite many economic challenges. Kenya's Chief Justice has decried the high level of corruption in the country's judiciary. We've also been hearing about the arrests of activists in the DRC. For more news and stories and interesting videos as well, just visit our website, dw.com/Africa. And from Bonn, I'm Isaac Mugabe, wishing you a splendid day ahead.